Hello and welcome to Talking Capital. I'm Ian Barnard, CEO of CapGen. Each month, I'm joined by a member of our investment team or a guest from one of the investors in our universe to talk about the investment themes and opportunities that are available today to family investors. What is CapGen? We're a private investment office for families with capital. Our clients are sophisticated, internationally minded investors, and what we do is to help them make the most of their capital and to seek out investment opportunities across any asset class in any region of the world. So in the course of these episodes, you can expect us to cover a globally diversified portfolio of assets and sectors, be that bricks and mortar or derivatives. In summary then, this is a podcast where we discuss the questions that we think are playing on the minds of sophisticated long-term investors. If that sounds up your street, do please subscribe and you'll enjoy a new episode published on the first Thursday of each month. Hello and welcome to the new year, to 2026. I hope you all managed to find some time to do whatever you do to switch off and to relax and to enjoy some downtime during the break from work that the seasonal festivities allow us. Long-term listeners will know that we revamped Talking Capital, this podcast, at the beginning of last year to move towards a more themed quarterly series of monthly podcasts. But the one thing from the prior version of Talking Capital that we've decided to leave in place is this start of the new year, Janus-like look back to what happened in 2025, the year that's passed, and to look ahead to things that we're watching out for in 2026, the year ahead. CapGen did have a very good 2025, and I was reminded of that this morning when speaking to a client with a, call it sort of steady growth, 60 to 80% equity volatility mandate. We have made 30% for them in dollars over the course of 2025. So it was a very strong year for us. Now, past performance is, as we know, no guide to the future. And anyway, this episode is principally about markets and what happened in 2025 and how CapGen performed. But clearly, you know, our experience of the markets in 2025 will affect how we've saw them and will also shape what we think of the opportunities in the year ahead. Anyway, I'm delighted to be joined by Robert Sears, our CIO, to cover this. So Robert, with a ridiculously wide range, how would you sum up 2025 in markets? What happened? What happened and what didn't happen?
Well, I think the overall is, it feels like a positive year, and it certainly was. So equities are up. I think growth has surprised to the upside for the another year in a row. So most people feel pretty positive about it. And it's tempting to slip back into the old, the S&P's up, and it was up, I think, 16, 17% for the year in total return terms, and feel it's the same story about AI. And certainly AI took the headlines if we're thinking about capital expenditure. It was the year where suddenly CapEx became the big thing, and the companies that had been quite capital efficient suddenly spent a lot of capital. So there were some big changes there, and that really did affect growth. So growth in the US, if we're saying what are the key drivers in the last few years, really it's been fiscal spending and CapEx linked to the AI boom has led and pushed US growth. So yes, that feels like the headline story, but I would say it's a different story. The real story of the year was this was the year where the rest of the world did better than the US. So this is something that we've talked about for a while, one of the themes for the next decade. But really, when we look at the returns, yes, the S&P's up 16, 17% for the year, but the overall global index was up about 21%. So that's 100% equities. And it was the other parts of the world, like Japan or emerging markets, which did much better. So it was a year where the rest of the world did better than the US. And if we look back, it's probably the scale of the outperformance, really, it's back to the years between 2000 and 2007, 8, where there was the last period where the rest of the world did better than the US. So that was quite different. So that's one theme. I think theme number two, which was linked to that, was the first half of the year, and it was a year of two halves. The first 6 months saw a big move down in the dollar. So that certainly helped being overweight the rest of the world. Now, in the rest of the year, that sort of flatlined and actually the dollar did a bit better. So we have these moves where it's not all in one direction, but that was a key change for the year. Is not only the rest of the world did better, it was the first year for a while where the dollars had some serious weakness in the first 6 months of the year. So that was the other big theme. And I think the third big theme, which really all captured a lot of the headlines and certainly was one of the reasons our portfolios outperformed for the year. It was a year where gold did really well and precious metals more broadly. So gold for the year up about 64%. The gold miners, where we had a big position within portfolios, up about 153% for the year. So, and even if we go back now a few years, actually gold miners has massively outperformed the NASDAQ. So although we're still tempted to look back to the last decade of it was the NASDAQ, it's AI is the key theme. Yes, some of those AI names did well for the year, but there we saw more differentiation, especially the last 6 months of the year. Some of those names are off 20-30%. Now, some, like Google, suddenly did really well and drove a lot of performance. But even for the year, Google underperformed gold miners. So it's a bit of a strange year where growth is doing well, but actually precious metals are doing well. So I think that was quite an important theme. And even most recent news, suddenly the forgotten cousin of gold, silver, suddenly was up about 30% in the last month. So we've seen some big moves in that space. Now, that points a bit to the themes of our sort of secular outlook. Yes, growth is pretty strong, but why are precious metals suddenly performing well? It's because we are in a world where inflation is going to run higher than interest rates. So a world of financial repression. And it's a world where we're a bit more worried about geopolitical order or disorder, as it were. And that, again, has been another sort of threat. So weaker dollar, geopolitical risk and tension, and fears of financial repression have helped drive that trade. So it isn't normal where the S&P is up that much and gold is up that much in a year. But that's why what I think distinguished this year from others. So the important economic move is still AI, and that's the secular trend which really matters, and the level of CapEx spending is sustaining markets where they are. So yes, that was a big theme, but actually those other three themes I've highlighted were pretty important for the year. And when we look at the S&P and we talk about, oh, valuations are expensive, actually the US valuations didn't get that much more expensive over the year. What we saw was earnings growth drove that 15-16% gain in the US. What we didn't see was the multiple expansion in the US. And that's where there's room for catch up in the rest of the world. So I think that's important. And that's really where when we're looking at our outlook for this year is, yes, valuations still pose a risk and there's the risk of overall debt levels in the world, but global growth looks pretty good. And that's pretty supportive and can be supportive, particularly in a world where there's plenty of liquidity and policy is easing. So fiscal policy, regulatory policy, and monetary policy all easing and providing liquidity, that can sustain valuations for a longer period of time. So I think that's somewhat of the dichotomy we're caught between, is you've got to be prudent, bearing in mind some of those long-term risks, but actually short-term, if anything, growth looks like it may pick up in that world of ample liquidity. And that remains the key driving point. So yes, there's all the talk about the AI bubble. That wasn't where most of the money was made last year, in fact. But that is the key thing we need to look at, how long that bubble will be sustained. And actually, bubbles can last a lot longer than people think. So I think that remains a key point to note. And also the other one is, what pricks the economy and sends you into recession, and then you're worried recession will lead to a bad bear market? I think that's the other thing we've certainly looked at for a while, and I think really should keep in your mind, is it's probably going to be the market downturn which leads the economy into a downturn rather than the other way around. So we do really need to watch at what can turn some of those drivers of the stock market, which has been through the wealth effect, has been driving economic growth. So I think that remains the key foremost point for most investors to consider.
And Robert, what didn't do well last year? So you've drawn the distinction between non-US equities and US equities, and between dollar and non-dollar, and pointed out things like gold miners and gold, which have actually done well, not just last year, but actually over quite a long period of time. So lots of happy, good news, positive, upward sloping price charts, time price charts. But what were the things that just didn't do so well last year?
I think it's going to be more relative rather than absolute, because most things were up for the year. So I think we've got to look at that. I mean, on a relative basis, we say, well, Bitcoin actually surprised to the downside compared to expectations and compared to gold, as an example. So Bitcoin sold off quite a bit in the last period of time. So if we look at the, within that protective or element of collectible assets, as it were, Bitcoin disappointed, I think, for the year would be one area. I think bonds didn't do so badly for the year. So I think that's one area you'd look at. But actually, it remains one of the worst trades of our lifetime is you look at where duration got in that bubble. And one of the areas that I think is now commonly talked about, and we did actually in our weekly meetings highlight this when it was right at the top of the chart, was Austrian 100-year bonds. It was astonishing that anybody was lending at those ridiculously low rates, and it continues to be a losing trade. So we are still in the midst of the worst bear market for bonds in the last 100 years, which has sort of slipped beneath the surface. Now, yes, you made a little bit of money on bonds, but it wasn't as much as you could have made in all those other areas. So bonds, as well as Bitcoin, I think are two of the disappointing areas. And also, I think stock selection does matter. And we've said be active, and it is a world for being active. And as I talked about, some of the big names that are out there, quality equities, didn't do very well. For a lot of famous investors in that space have had a decade of really good performance. You think about Nike, just without naming any of the names that we're suggesting a buy or sell recommendation, but you take Nike as a classic example of that, or United Health, or more recently, some of the other tech names that have been in that losing trade example, they're off 20, 30, 40% from the highs. Which again is quite something to remember. And I think equally, I would highlight, we've had a good run in banks. So banks was another area which actually had been bouncing quite a bit. But just an example of the dangers of if you go in at those really high levels, what can happen? Citigroup is still massively off its high from 2007. And even Bank of America is only just up to the high point. So I think that's the vulnerability and risk people should be remembering this year, is when you go in at some of these nosebleed levels, there can be these big sell-offs. But yes, there's been a big dispersion in the last 6 months of the year between the winners, Google's and Nvidia's doing well, versus some of the more Microsoft-led names. Even Microsoft has underperformed this year, which is somewhat surprising in a year where AI has done really well. So I think it's been a year for being a stock picker. Within hedge funds, again, pretty good year overall, but even some of the famous hedge funds have sort of underperformed on a relative basis. Macro's been an area of winners and losers. Some people have done really well, some of the famous funds, others pretty flat year. Futures trading managers, probably a laggard if we were to say another area, albeit they bounced a bit in the second part of the year. So I think there have been those relative losers, as it were, across the board. And the other one is the dollar overall. If you actually look at a big market, given that first 6 months' performance, that's been probably the biggest large market that's lost in the year for most investors, was the decrease in the dollar in the first 6 months of the year has probably been a bigger cause for relative underperformance for investors for the full year.
Robert, thank you. Let's move on to the second topic, and let's zoom in on one particular asset class, which I know we spent a chunk of last year talking about as well, which is private markets. And I read something in the Apple News feed over the Christmas New Year break, which was the travails of the private equity industry. That is to say, the somewhat frozen nature of transactions in private equity and private markets, where those private capital managers that are holding onto portfolio companies are struggling to sell them at the price that they think they're worth. And those managers with new pools of capital are finding it hard to find assets at attractive prices, given that the ambient discount rates, which is linked to global interest rates, has clearly gone up in the last few years. So this was a retail press article about private equity, which tells you by the time it's reached there, it's happened and it could well be behind us. So the fact that private equity feels a bit frozen, I think, has, you know, we've been talking about for a while. I wonder, Robert, if you could talk about what we saw against that background last year, perhaps both in terms of, at an aggregate level, the industry, and then perhaps what we saw in our portfolios, which to my eyes looked a little bit different.
Yeah, I think maybe I was quite kind in the last question of leaving out private capital, because really, if we're to say the story since 2022 has been private capital markets underperforming public markets. And I think by the end of next year, we may be at a point where the five-year rolling number looks relatively disappointing when we've seen arguably these lot of assets are stuck and the liquidity is not possible at the prices they're marked at, I think is where we've been. So that remains a risk. And if we're to say, how could you lose money last year? Some of those big publicly listed private equity names have had down years. So Blackstone, KKR were down for the year, their stock market price. So the public markets are pointing in a direction of what's actually all the risks that are going on within the private market. So it's been relatively disappointing. Now, having said that, there are a few glimmers of hope. So the glimmers of hope are one of the big problems has been this lack of liquidity, lack of distributions. Now, as you talked about, Ian, our portfolio is actually, we've seen some of the larger names, buyout names, have actually had quite a few exits in the last 6 months. So I think before we write off the year, we'll have to see in three, four months' time what the Q4 valuations are like. But certainly there's been enough distributions that liquidity has not been as bad as feared. So maybe we're seeing a bottoming out and that's starting to improve. So there have been some decent exits. That's not uniform. So I think that maybe partly depends on the type of portfolio you've got, but that's certainly one positive. I think the other glimmer, though, is maybe not so much in our portfolios, but I think where you'll see more in the markets is one area that needs to turn up to help private markets more broadly is the IPO market. And there we really had another year of the expectations at the start of the year have been dashed. Possibly it was linked to policy uncertainty with the whole tariff uncertainty, which I didn't talk about in the first question, but that we did see a lot of ups and downs. So yes, the S&P ended up. We've had two big drawdowns, both in April at the height of tariffs and again later towards the end of the year. So it's been a rocky ride. I think our portfolio has weathered that better, but there's been this uncertainty. And that uncertainty had stopped a lot of CapEx outside AI, but it's also stopped a lot of the IPO activity that might have happened otherwise. Now, the glimmers of hope is, given, again, that sort of bubble question, we may see some really large IPOs happening in 2026 that really open up that liquidity. And then you really will see or could see a pickup in a lot of private portfolios, which are overweight some of those late stage venture names. So most notably, I suppose, SpaceX is out there in the press, but there's a bunch of other large private companies that may well IPO, including, let's take Anthropic as an example. So if we do see these big IPOs from SpaceX, Anthropic and others, that really, one, would help the private numbers. It could lead in another way, though, to sort of a big boost up in public markets. We may see the final bubble stage valuation. So that it doesn't mean it's all going to be one way. But I think the glimmers of hope, the more liquidity there is in the markets and the IPOs, the more that will help some of those stranded private equity assets. So and we'll see less of potentially the continuation vehicles, which has been a trend for the year, and more of those sides. So I think that's the element of hope for the year ahead. But I think there is a real risk, and there's going to be a big differentiation. So yes, you need to be a stock picker in public markets. You need to be a fund picker in private markets. Is just buying private equity performance. And this is a bit of the risk of the private wealth entrance at this stage. It's probably still going to be pretty disappointing on a relative basis from the starting point. But there will still be winners and losers. There's still ample scope to create value in these markets. But I think the two things I would just remind everyone is most value in public markets and private markets is driven by a remarkably small number of companies. The famous Bessemer study shows that actually very few companies in the US have driven all of the gains in the last 100 years. So you do need to be with the winners. And there are a lot of companies that are losing money. And we even look back the last several years, the number of unprofitable companies in the US that have just been kept alive by the levels of borrowing that they've had locked in still remains a bit of a problem. So I think this is a time where you do need to be more active than passive. So yes, it's felt like a good year. A lot of things have been up. But if there's one message for the years ahead is, and we've seen that even within the AI theme, that differentiation, but being active, both public and private markets, I think is the way you can weather and keep investing with managers that really have shown the ability to drive returns, not from multiple expansion. I think that's going to be the key point. So yes, to your point about what we've seen in our portfolio versus the market, I think that's what a lot is going to be the key test in the years ahead is, yes, private markets may be buoyed by some IPO activity and more liquidity, but you really need to be with the right managers. There's going to be a big dispersion between winners and losers.
Staying with selectivity, Robert, but moving on to the third topic, which is about opportunities. I wonder if we can do this in two parts. So over the course of 2025, we talked about areas that we thought might be of interest. I've got noted down here, biotech, active long short stock picker, small caps, CLO equity, and real assets. So it'd be interesting to have you quickly, Robert, just sort of gloss what we did, the things we looked at, what we did, what we didn't do, why we didn't do them, and then perhaps go from there to the look ahead. Okay, what do we think of the new or continuing opportunities for portfolios as we go into 2026? Is it all about AI?
I think the short answer to that is no. And that's somewhat counterintuitively is, I think last year was a good year for us and a lot of things went right. But I think with positioning, not everything's going to work at the same time. So you have to have things working and it's like having inventory of stock. There are the items that are going off that are doing the best at now and you're starting to plant the seeds or you get those new items that are going to do well in the future. And it's a constant restocking, really. So in a way, I think some of those themes you talked about are the ones that are going to explode rather than that explode the most. So if we were to go from front to back, what's the most important thing, which we mentioned? Positioning. Be long equities against bonds the last few years. That remains, for a long-term investor, the most important thing on a relative basis. Now, you can be slightly more or less risk at any point in time, but bonds have done really badly. And even having it diversifies elsewhere has been a key decision point. So having gold and hedge funds versus bonds has been a key point. But yes, equities over bonds, and that remains the case as we look at it now. I think the point about rest of the world, which we talked about in the new regime, that worked last year. I still think that's the direction to point in. So one of the things we talked about and we've had on this podcast about EM that opened up last year, it's something that could run a lot more. Now, it will have its ups and downs, but if we're looking at a period of buying the unloved areas that will benefit from new regime of higher inflation, weaker dollar, and benefit from some of those relative valuation positions, I think that remains a key area to point to. So we're still overweight, but that's been one area we've been building in. The one, gold miners, that's one that's one of the stocks that's done the best and probably nearest the end of its shelf life. So we're not saying now's the time, but we are already looking ahead if we're saying of how we can recycle that money and protect portfolios in a better way after it's done so well. So that one's probably nearer the end, whereas the ones nearer the beginning, maybe biotech. It's been unloved. It did really well for a decade. It's had 3 or 4 years of very bad performance. It had the volatility at the start of the year linked to sort of the uncertainty about Trump and Maha. But actually, the last 3-6 months have been outstanding bounce back in performance. So that's more longer term one, planting the seeds a bit earlier. But yes, we're pleased to have added to that. And we're actually going to look to add another biotech manager in the and increase that exposure. So again, you sort of move in pieces rather than all in one go. So we've added one manager, we're adding another and adding more exposure in that direction. Whereas gold, there's still more time for it to shine. Everybody loves it now. So you're getting to the point where the end of the market is when everybody's on the same trade. We're not quite there yet, but it's closer there. So there it's more thinking about actually the area that could benefit from more buoyant growth and is cheap could be industrial metals versus the precious metals. So that's one area we're looking at closely, unloved area, which could do really well from a period of high defense spending, higher AI spending, and the energy transition. And with an area where capital cycle is completely in the positive direction, in that there's been no investment and there's a lack of supply. So I think that's one area if we're looking at for the year ahead that we potentially add to. But on those other themes, being active versus passive, continue to do that and have tilted more in that direction. So we've added long short managers in the last year. We've got more to add. I think to that point about it's all about AI, AI matters, and it's how do we participate without putting our portfolios at risk. So a lot of those things I've talked about were cheap areas that will do well for a decade, but you don't want to be not investing in AI. In terms of active managers, we've added to active managers within the last year, which continues to be an area we're looking at. In terms of some of those smaller cap, large cap, that's probably an area that hasn't worked. So I think in terms of what could do well for the next decade, but hasn't really helped so much, but we've added more to it. Two of the managers we added in the last 6 months have been taking some of the assets which have done really well in the last year and adding to active small cap stock pickers that had pretty negative to down years, or certainly had drawdowns and had pretty flat years. So that's more where you're pointing to what could do well in the future, but hasn't done well yet. One of the other big trades, which we've talked about for many years, and so I suppose that's probably doesn't need the introduction, but value against growth, somewhat surprisingly, one might say, even our the passive systematic way of adding value last year was up 44%, I think, for the year. So massively outperformed in a year. So that continues to be something that you want, that will do well for the decade. It did well last year, but we're far closer to the beginning versus the end of that trade. So that's another of the areas we're looking at. So I think the newer areas have been more those active managers, biotech manager, some of the ways to get some hedge fund exposure, perhaps that isn't so dependent on the bad market to do well. So some of the multi-strat exposure, we're looking to add some more liquid multi-strat exposure. So I think that's another area that we'll look to add to for the year ahead. And on private markets, I think that's more about continuing what we've been doing for the last several years. But I think there is take the advantage of getting to good managers where other investors are pulling back. So some of the endowments pulling back has opened up some opportunity there, but it's moving a bit down the size. So smaller managers and more specialized managers. I think if that's a theme of running between what we're doing, that's been one of the areas. And the last one has been take advantage of a bit more of that, providing liquidity at the end of life. So we did do a manager last in the last 15 months or so in that continuation vehicle space. We potentially that's another area to add a bit more to. Take advantage of investors selling at discounted prices, some of those quality assets. So that's another another of the things we're looking at for the year ahead.
Mindful we've only got 2 or 3 minutes left. I just wonder, Rob, if we can just, as a sort of three bits maybe, just have a little chat about real estate. Obviously, it's had a writ large, and we did a series, a Talking Capital series on this last year, looking at the opportunity in real estate. But it would be good just to hear your sense of generally, and obviously there's, you know, it's all about local and individual assets, but your sense of what it felt like to be a real estate owner last year and what you see as the opportunity going into 2026.
So I think broadly, we have had a period where some sectors have had trouble. I think this repricing from interest rates going up hasn't caused the big widespread recession that many feared for and remained a possibility, given we've had that fiscal support and AI capex. But it has caused localized problems. And real estate has been at the heart of one of those. It's had one of their worst drawdowns, recessions, going back to the experience in commercial real estate of really sort of the start of the 90s, 2008. This has been another one of these bad periods. Now, it takes a while, as we've talked about before, the mechanism of waiting for loans to come due and having the potential of sort of extend and pretend. So it's been a slower moving car crash, but it wasn't just real estate. It was also in credit markets. We've had localized problems. So there have been defaults. It's not been a broad default cycle, but European chemical makers have had a really tough time. So there have been these industries with tough periods. So broadly, real estate, it's not felt great, but there have been some positive signs. But it's one of these ones that, as we talked about before, it's not where you want to jump in and just take the beta and buy the market. You still got to be ultra selective. So there are opportunities to make money, but being selective was really important. Having quality assets in areas that have themes that we can support them. So that's broadly, if you're a broad real estate owner, still not felt super great, but if you'd had in the right areas, it's been, and that's the way we've been tilting our portfolio. So for example, our Spanish specialized manager who talked on this podcast during the year continues to do exceptionally well. And they've so exceptional people with the right wind at their backs, and you can have really good results and deliver liquidity even in these difficult markets. And we've tried to move more in that direction. So we added another US manager in real estate to take advantage in that way. But it's not been a broad market where you wanted to suddenly just broadly buy REITs or just broadly buy office exposure. So I think it's too early to jump in more broadly, and you didn't need to. There were other areas that looked more appealing. But on a relative basis, if you look at some of our indicators, broad S&P exposure versus real estate and bonds, real estate kind of looks in the middle of the range. It's not an exceptional buy everything moment, nor is it terrible. So I think it's being selective still remained the buzzword in that regard. It's not, for example, in liquid REITs, within our liquid real assets, we still have nothing. We've found ways to provide inflation protection in other ways and for the last few years. And that's been a positive place to be. So I think in the years ahead, you'll likely see more of that come back, but it's not been a moment to sort of jump in broadly and buy lots of real estate.
Robert, fantastic. Thank you. Very thorough, very comprehensive, very good survey, both backwards and forwards. So thank you very much. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye. A link to Capgen's privacy notice and full terms can be found in this podcast summary description and on our website.